Hello, hello, and welcome to Wednesday Word of Mouth, right here on CKLN 88.1 FM at Ryerson University in downtown Toronto. This is 1 hour of spoken word coming at you from Wednesday Word of Mouth here on CKLN. I'm your host, Robin Nieto, here with Daniel Libby. At the top of the show, we have an interview with Diego Mendez from the Justice for Janitors campaign. He'll be on the line talking to us about how janitors are fighting for a living wage right here in Toronto. And then we'll be talking about transit, as TTC workers hold a series of public meetings every Sunday until May 2nd. And we'll be back with all that and more after this message. This is Wednesday Word of Mouth.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
We are back here on Wednesday Word of Mouth, 88.1 FM, CKLN, here at Ryerson University. And now I think we got Diego Mendez on the line. Hello, Diego.
Yes, good evening.
Thanks, Diego, for joining us. And you had a press conference today. It's all about justice at Hurley Corporation. Tell us about it.
Sure, yes, we did have a press conference this morning. We had a Hurley janitor speaking out about something that's going on with their company. We've, of course, been on the program before, and so some listeners might be aware that there's a Justice for Janitors campaign happening in Toronto, and it's all about trying to raise standards that not only are going to help janitors in terms of improving what are right now poverty wages and getting some benefits, but it's also going to help stabilize an industry that right now is just spiraling out of control. And that's also going to mean improved quality services for office tenants. Now, as part of that process, we have different companies who are part of agreements. And right now, Hurley seems that they want to abandon this process that's going to improve the standards in the industry, improve the lives of thousands of families.
Diego, tell us...
Hurley janitors. Sorry, so Hurley janitors are just standing up and saying, you can't do that. You need to be part of this process.
Okay, so tell us about Hurley Corporation, why it's so important, how many janitors are working there, and what's the situation?
Sure, Hurley Corporation is actually one of the largest cleaning companies in the city of Toronto. They have close to 3,000, at least over 2,600 employees in the city of Toronto. So they're definitely one of the big players, and it's important that they play a big role. Now, they were also recently purchased by Compass Group Canada, and Compass is a large multinational based in the UK. Just to throw some figures out here, and I'm going off the top of my head, so I hope I'm accurate here, but in 2009, the parent company of Compass brought in revenues almost $23 billion. Compass Group Canada last year brought in, I believe it's $1.25 billion. So we're talking, there's a lot of money here. Certainly there's enough money to help janitors make a decent living.
You know, Diego, can you tell us about the cleaning industry? Because in a news release that I'm reading here, there's a paragraph here about a family from Colombia who came here at a successful business, but because they're just starting off in Canada, the woman of the family had to take a job as a cleaner. And I think that might be a similar story for a lot of immigrants as well. Their first jobs are as cleaners. Tell us about that. How janitors' positions, how important is it to the population here in Toronto?
Sure. The person you're talking about is Doris. And Doris's story is quite tragic, because they did have a successful business in Colombia, but were forced to flee for security reasons. And when they got here, their savings ran out as they were waiting for their papers to come through, for their working papers, and they were forced to start working. And the easiest thing for them to find was a job cleaning. And I want to make it clear right now that this first cleaning job they had was not with Hurley's. It was with another kind of company, and a company that we're often having struggles with. There are subcontracting companies that create schemes basically to rip workers off. So Doris, her husband, and their eldest son worked for an entire month full-time, and they weren't getting paid. And then finally, at the end of the month, they were paid, and they received a $500 check to share amongst the three of them for their labor. So that is not uncommon at all in the industry. And part of what our efforts are to do are to change that. And companies like that are really dragging down standards and making it very difficult for legitimate cleaning companies who want to do the right thing. It is a bit of a confusing thing to explain. It basically, the industry here works on a bidding process. So companies who bid lower, who can do the work for cheaper, usually win the contract. So those kind of companies really put downward pressure on standards. So it's really important that companies like Hurley, the large companies in the industry, lead by example and try to establish standards that everybody needs to meet. But right now, it seems that what they want to do is turn their backs, abandon that process, and walk away.
So this is the latest campaign is focused on Hurley's, and your press conference today was highlighting the situation for janitors, and I believe people like Doris were at the press conference.
That's right. Pavel, Felix, and Doris spoke from their own experience. Ignacio Penafiel also was going to be at our press conference. He's a worker who works at the office towers at the Eaton Center. He's been there for 10 years, and his body has just broken down after 10 years of mopping and sweeping. He was not able to join us today. He ended up having to go to the hospital for some tests, but luckily one of his coworkers came and filled in for him last minute and read his testimony. So yeah, it's a very difficult life that a lot of these janitors lead, but they're trying their best to make an improvement, and we all simply believe that Hurley's needs to play an important leading role in that.
So if your campaign is successful, what does it mean to workers?
If the campaign is successful?
Yeah. What will it mean to workers? What will it mean to their wage and their benefits? And what will it look like for them?
Sure. I think all people are saying is they want their lives to be a little easier than the one they are right now. Justice for Janitors campaigns have been successful in dozens of cities across North America, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Boston, New York, and even in Montreal. So let's take the case of Montreal because it's perhaps the closest city to us and a good example because it's another Canadian city. So workers in Montreal make no less than $15 an hour. They have family benefits. They have sick days. And their employers even make contributions to their retirement savings plans. And the reason that exists in Montreal is because SEIU was successful in running a Justice for Janitors campaign a few years ago. So that has helped establish industry standards in that market and essentially has made life a little easier for workers there. So that we would like to see the same things here in Toronto. There's just no excuse for a major city like Toronto to be so far behind on industry standards and worker rights.
How many janitors are there in Toronto? Do you have a number, an estimate about how many people in Toronto work in the cleaning industry?
I don't have that number in front of me right now, but the number is certainly in the thousands. Thousands upon thousands.
Yeah, because it's very common, particularly in immigrant communities, to have families working in cleaning. It's in cleaning. That's one of the mainstays in terms of a family trying to make ends meet. One partner working in as a janitor.
That's right. I mean, corporations may be able to outsource, call-in centers. We may be able to outsource a lot of manufacturing jobs, but our offices still need to get cleaned. So that's certainly one job that is not going away.
All right, Diego, I want to thank you for joining us on the program tonight, and I hope we'll hear from you in the future and how the campaign goes.
I'll be happy to join you. If the audience wants to read up on the latest, we have our information up at justiceforjanitors.ca.
Thank you, Diego.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, that was Diego Mendez. He is from Justice for Janitors, talking about the new campaign, Justice at Hurley Corporation for Janitors here in Toronto. Over to you, Daniel. Thanks, Robin. And there's lots of stuff going on. We got the spring is in the air. The sun is setting. And, well, it seems like a lot of people I know are depressed these days. You know, when I get depressed, sometimes I like to listen to some music. I think this is actually the song I like to listen to, produced by Madlib. It's by the artist Tyron, and it's called Still Never Happy.
In the B-boy stance, I'm in the smog all alone.
Madlib and Bacon. I'm on the set.
My shit is out of your brain, out of your frame.
We are brought to you, officer. You want gun eye?
No eye. Gun too hot for eye.
Look at my mom and I.
It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You can say what you want, it ain't changing me. I want what I want, I'm never happy. It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You can say what you want, it ain't changing me.
Man, I want a Lexus to impress the opposite sex and get the exes mad. They ain't with a nigga. I wanna get a better crib and yeah, I should be happy that I got this one, but this one ain't that one. And that one got a swimming pool, more rooms than I need. But shit, you see the view? Bigger backyard garage with two cars in it. Mine got an Astro van that stayed in it. And yeah, I know it took a minute to get it, and mama helped out with it by giving us the cheddar. But I wanna be my wait, no, I wanna be the nigga with a better beam. Yep, that's me, but am I happy?
No, I'm never happy. It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You say what you want, it ain't changing me. I want what I want, I'm never happy. It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You say what you want, it ain't changing me.
Man, I want a Bentley, plus a crib with a high ceiling to get all of these women feeling bad. They ain't with a brother. I want to get another whip, but nah, I gotta spend money clearing up credit, and Sally Mae ain't making that an option. I know I should watch it, cause I've been blessed to go to college when other folks the same color as me couldn't get a job, cause they never graduated, so they stay up on the block. And yeah, I know I'm not in a bad position, cause I got a pot to piss in and a roof over my head. But what, I want fame, wait, no, I want to be the nigga with a bigger name, and that's me. But am I happy? No,
never. It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You can say what you want, it ain't changing me. I want what I want, I'm never happy. It's my life and I do what I wanna do. You can say what you want, it ain't changing me.
Wednesday, just getting ready here, getting our engines warmed up, because we're about to talk about transit. That's right, Toronto, a lot of people take the TTC, and well, you know, it is a big issue. And you know, I think before we get into this clip that Robin's prepared, I think it'd be a good time to play actually a throwback here. Throwback to 2007, one of the first interviews I actually did on CKLN. I got to interview Adam Jambroni, the chair of the TTC, commissioner, and it was at Car Free Day. And, well, here is what Adam Jambroni had to say in 2007 about the transit and improvements on transit.
Toronto is the least funded of any major transit system in North America.
I've really been liking in the TTC more screens I've noticed, which have information and news and things like this.
Well, we're rolling out screens across the system on the platforms. We're not comfortable putting them in the subway cars where you're a captive audience. We also expect in the near future to have the next train coming.
So that's what Adam Jambroni had to say in 2007. We had the words the coming soon to the TTC would be the next train coming, and now they've got the screens in almost every station I've seen. They've got the next train coming, and Adam Jambroni, you know, he announced it back then. So there have been some improvements from 2007 to 2009, technically, but you know, there are service issues, I guess.
Yep. So this is why this is our topic today. Our discussion topic is TTC riders and workers. The transit workers are putting on public town halls, and it's called Let's Talk. And they've been doing this now since last Sunday when John Tory was the moderator. Mm-hmm. And that was at, when was that? The next one is Sunday, April 18th at the Stephen Leacock Collegiate, and that's Birchmount and Shepherd. And the moderator is Diana Reggio. She's the president and CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund Canada. And this is open to the public. There's room for only 300. So it says come early. Admission is free. And again, that's Sunday, April 18th at 1 o'clock. It starts at 1 o'clock. And so the issue, according to Bob Kinnear, he's the president of the TTC workers, he said that the quality of service on the TTC is a hot topic these days, and transit workers see this as an opportunity. He says that the workers want the best possible relationships with their riders, and they're opening up discussion for a constructive exchange of views, says Bob Kinnear. And I'm not sure if anybody who's listening right now has actually gone to the transit public meetings, but if you have, we're going to open the line to take your perspective on this.
It's 416-595-1655. Anybody out there has anything to say on TTC? We got that topic today. 416-595-1655.
And now we're just going to go to a few clips about what some people in Toronto have to say about the TTC.
Transit.
So what do you think about TTC?
It's great. There's nothing really wrong with it. It's just that sometimes the bus drivers could be pretty mean.
So what do you think they can do to improve the situation?
Try and be more nicer. Like, especially, they're kind of mean. Like, if you don't have bus fare sometimes, they'll just tell you to come off the bus. If you're short, they'll tell you to come off the bus. Maybe if they had a heart sometimes, it would be nice. Thank you.
So what do you think about the TTC?
The TTC needs to stop breaking down. They need to stop hiking the prices up. You're not recording.
I don't take the TTC anymore because it's too inconsistent. And they keep raising their fees and don't improve their service. So I'm not interested in a service that doesn't give me what I need.
All right, so there you have three comments about the TTC. And we're talking purely about service here. And, I mean, that is the issue of the of these TTC riders and workers Let's Talk public meetings, service. But right. I think the other issue, too, is funding. You know, we have over 4 million people in the city. The issue would be, is there enough funding for the TTC? Has it been able to expand? There were a lot of promises made with Metrolinx. There were announcements made of huge expansions in the TTC. Then the provincial government came and said, no, we're going to delay this thing.
Right, that they can't afford it. So the Toronto, as far as I know, is moving. They're trying to move ahead with some light rail streetcars. I think Eglinton and St. Clair. But there was old plans too with extending the lines, which can't be afforded now, they're saying. That's what Adam Jambronio was actually saying in that old clip from 2007 was actually, I interviewed him, it was a few days after they had just raised the fares, or announced that they were going to raise the fares. And I guess they've done that twice since then now. And he even says that we're one of the least funded cities in the world in terms of transit.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of announcements made by the provincial government, and then it goes back, but it gives them credit in the meantime, especially during election times. But let's go to the next clip, which is the last public meeting and what someone had to say who was in the audience. And let's hear the discussion between the public and TTC workers.
All right. It's not your affairs. I said, hey, I was told to deserve and protect that, help support you drivers, because why should we be hold on to the bus by because these two teenagers are trying to be smart with you? So she didn't like it. She didn't like it, and she just and then the, finally the teenagers got off and everything else. But I phoned the TTC and I complained and I told them what I did, and I said your female driver just didn't appreciate it when I was trying to protect her from these teenagers attacking her.
It's a difficult line to draw, I think. Is there are times when it might be helpful if you said a calming word, and other times when it wouldn't, and I guess you have to leave it to the judgment of the operator. Did you want to comment on that, John?
First of all, if it came across her being rude to you, I apologize for that. However, we, when we're in that seat, whether we're involved with one a dispute with one passenger or 10, we have the responsibility of the safety of everybody on that vehicle. And although it may not have been communicated to you properly, it is possible she was asking you not to get involved because she didn't want one of the teenagers to then lash out at you and possibly assault or injure you. That may not have been what happened, but it is at least something else to think about. She does have the responsibility, as do all of us, for every person on that vehicle.
But then we were always confused, always accused that we're standing up and hurting the drivers, and we're only trying to show that we really want to be helpful to drivers. Just because the teenagers are attacking, this is where the riders are trying to help the drivers, which the drivers say they don't get no support.
Well, I think we appreciate the fact that you, because I always do admire people who care enough to get involved, but it's a difficult line in terms of what time it's going to help and what times it won't. And so I think we've had the discussion, and we should try to use our good judgment as to when it might help and when it won't. And I think the one point Bob Deere made, which is always the case, is if you see somebody who's been abused, it's always going to be a good thing to give them a word of encouragement quietly, just to say, look, we all have bad days, and so we'll leave it at that. Again, thank you very much for your comment. We had Rick, you have the microphone, and you're up.
All right, that was the last, actually that was the first of the public, the Let's Talk public town hall meetings with Toronto Transit workers. And the next one coming up is this Sunday, and then the last one is right here at Ryerson University, at the Ryerson University Library on May 2nd.
Okay. I actually saw it a few days ago. They played it on Rogers Community TV. They played the whole thing as a special presentation. And I remember they were doing something in the audience where they had, I guess they had given the people in the audience a way to vote that they could, I think it was an electronic voting system, and they would ask questions. And then they would take, it was like an audience poll automatically there, right? And then they asked, one of the questions was to the people in the audience, had you ever seen a transit worker being abused? And it was like over two-thirds, I think, of the people said they had seen that. So that is a serious issue.
That is a serious issue.
And then, yeah.
Transit, it looks like during this mayor's race, I would guess that transit's going to be one of the hottest topics of discussion, mm-hmm. because transit doesn't have to do only with the TTC. It has to do with gridlock in terms of, you know, car traffic. So right now in downtown Toronto, there's almost, I think up until past 6 o'clock, you'll have gridlock in the city, which is, right. I mean, 20 years ago was unheard of. So right now we're in a situation in Toronto where we can't continue this way. Something's going to have to give, and hopefully that something would be the province. Mm-hmm. giving the right funds to move on, but they have a serious issue where they gave up $1 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, the big issue is, why doesn't the province give the money to expand TTC, right? Because then we start blaming the city, but the city really depends on the province for getting money for the TTC. So we say, mm-hmm. well, why doesn't exactly. the province give the proper funding to the city for TTC if more than 2 million people use it?
Well, this issue has already come up in the mayor's in the early platforms for mayor. We actually played some clips last week. We had the clip of Sarah Thompson where she explains a bit of her plan of doing the tolls on highways, expressways to fund transit. And then there was also we played a Giorgio Mammoliti clip Giorgio Mammoliti is looking to upload the whole transit system to the province. So not only he's not necessarily looking for the province to fund transit, he's actually looking to give the whole transit system to the province. There was also the George Smitherman started his campaign off calling for Adam Giambroni to resign as TTC commissioner.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see. I think part of the reason why Giambroni had to be driven out, by a certain newspaper in his city, was because he was quite on top of the issue of TTC. So now that he's out of the picture, so now we'll see what happens with transit. But talking about politicians and talking about who speaks up for the TTC, let's go to the next clip and see who's talking about transit at the legislature right after this TTC PSA. Just some sounds from the TTC that's recognizable to more than 2 million people who take it every day.
Oh yeah.
So I need a third party in point of order.
Okay, unanimous consent for all members of the chamber to wear the Safe Transit City buttons today during the session.
Agreed? No. Heard no.
What's up next? So.
Question, leader of the third party.
Thank you, Speaker. My question's to the Premier. Toronto families are feeling betrayed after being told that the McGuinty government is backing away from its promised support for public transit projects in their city. My question is a simple one, Speaker. Did the Premier consult with Toronto MPPs in his own caucus before he derailed the plans for Toronto's new light rail system?
Premier?
Speaker, my colleague needs to understand, I've said this a few times before, and I'm not sure how I can introduce further clarity into this. We remain absolutely committed to making the investments that we have spoken about in the past, Speaker, into public transit in the City of Toronto and beyond, Speaker. What we have done is taken into account our financial circumstances. We've taken into account the consequences of a global recession on our finances, Speaker. So we've decided that we need to stretch out that investment over a longer period of time. And I would implore, once again, my honourable colleague to understand that that is the appropriate and responsible thing to do in the circumstances.
Supplementary.
Well, Speaker, let's be clear. What the Premier is saying is that Toronto families have to wait. They have to keep waiting at their stops. They have to keep missing dinner with their kids. And they have to stay waiting, sitting in gridlock throughout the city. He thinks it's more important to hand out another corporate tax cut and build a private diesel train to the airport.
God bless.
But the member from Eglinton Lawrence vehemently disagrees with the Premier on this matter. On his website, it says, and I quote, build the Eglinton LRT now. Did the Premier consult with this member, a former TTC commissioner, before he derailed the plans for the Toronto transit system?
Me too.
Speaker, I'm not sure what more I can say except that we plan to move ahead. We're waiting now for the best advice from Metrolinx with respect to how we might schedule that. And there may be better news than my colleague is anticipating on that score in terms of how quickly we can move ahead. But, Speaker, let me tell you a little bit about what we have done as a sign of our commitment. We've invested province-wide $9.3 billion so far in public transit, which represents about $9.3 billion more than the previous government put in. Speaker, we've also, with respect to the City of Toronto, invested $3.5 billion. We're also turning over a portion of the provincial gas tax, and that's provided Toronto with $688 million over the first 5 years of the program for them to, in turn, invest in public transit. So I think by any objective measure, Speaker, we continue to be seen to be very supportive of public transit.
Final supplementary.
Speaker, Toronto residents were counting on the Premier to keep his word, to improve their lives and build their city. I'll quote one Toronto resident. Quote, I know this new LRT will make a huge difference to the people living in my community, whether they're commuting home in time to watch a daughter's soccer game or looking for a better way to make a doctor's appointment. That was the member for Don Valley East speaking about the Finch LRT. Did the Premier consult with him or the rest of his caucus of Toronto MPPs before breaking his promise on Transit City, or does he take his Toronto MPPs for granted the same way as he takes Torontonians for granted?
Premier?
Speaker, again, we remain absolutely committed. As a caucus and as a government, Speaker, to moving ahead with public transit.
All right, so that was a discussion at the legislature not too long ago, I think just a few days ago. And I think it was after that discussion that we had a new headline in the Toronto Star about Metrolinx going ahead with some kind of green signal, but when you read into it, You're not getting anything specific again. These promises, the problem with papers start publishing promises that are not kept, and they keep publishing these things as soon as there's some kind of so-called signal. And in this Star article, it's a green light. Where is this green light? There are only discussions being held, and there's been discussions now for years about what's going to happen next with the TTC. So if you make a promise, like the provincial government did, to put in $4 billion to expand the transit, and then they go back and they say, no, we're not going to do this, and now they're going back again and saying, yes, we're going to do this, I think you got to be careful before you start publishing what they have to say until you see some kind of ink signed on a contract somewhere. So the interesting thing is, I think the background when it comes to the TTC transit expansion is, where are the trains coming from? And I think that's an interesting point. They're coming from, hopefully, from Bombardier. But our mayor has been saying that he's hoping that there's going to be some kind of stipulation that says at least 50% of the trains are going to have Canadian content. So I'm not sure. I thought everything was coming from Bombardier. But if Miller's saying that, he's hoping that at least 50% is going to be coming from, it's going to have Canadian content. It would be good to find out what's actually going on in this deal for Canadians.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
So we did open up the line. It's 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. For your views of transit, could be TTC, could be gridlock, what could be done. All these issues will be coming up at the TTC's public town hall meetings with the Toronto Transit workers. The next one that's coming up is on Sunday, April 18th, from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. at Stephen Leacock Collegiate Institute. That's at 2450 Birchmount Road. That's north of Sheppard Avenue East. And if you can't get out there, then the last meeting, from what I see here in their ad in the Metro paper, is on May 2nd, right here at Ryerson University at the library.
Right, and I'm not sure if you saw the headlines today, they even got it on the on that screen. The screens on the transit platform. How they have those quick CP24 style headlines, and one of them was that there was, I guess it was an incident yesterday or the day before on a bus. And they're saying that a transit worker assaulted a passenger or someone on the bus, which is, I guess they're keying in on that story. I'm not sure what the actual story is, but
we're not sure. There's no details.
One of the reasons is because it's a reverse. It's usually if it's all I don't think they report every time a transit worker gets injured.
No, I don't think so. This is the problem right now with the media and. Again, we depend on mostly the Star to get our news about what's going on in the city.
And you saw what they did with Jambroni.
Yeah, and we saw what that paper did with Jambroni. So we got to ask the Star, what is your editorial? What is it that you're after? What exactly are you after when it comes to the TTC? We'd like to know. Be straight about it. Don't be coming up with all these kinds of innuendos about what you want. It's obvious you want the Jambroni out. Now you're trying to focus in on any kind of negative stuff against TTC workers.
Well, yeah.
So tell it. I mean, it's obvious to me.
Situation though, I think they're keying in on the sex aspect. Same with this Helena Gurgis. That seems to be their big headlines now.
But the Helena Gurgis has a lot of secrecy involved. There's very little detail that comes out on her case.
But they're keying in on the. They've got some sort of private investigator has found links to drugs, and they're not explaining that. But they have, that was in the article. It says a private investigator has from CTV or something, reported to CTV that there's some sort of link. And then now that they're saying that there is an RCMP investigation, you know, that's the thing, is that they seem to, these media companies seem to be keying in not necessarily on the political issues, but it's the personal lives and the sex and drugs.
It's the, what's called a smear campaign.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it is. And you're playing politics because you've taken on a political role to decide who's going to be a king and who's not. Who's going to be, you're being a king maker. And that's not the position, I don't think, of the media. The media's position is to defend the public interest. And I don't see how someone's personal life has anything to do with the public interest. But what was done was done. Again, we have opened our lines to the people in Toronto, to all the folks, members of communities right here in Toronto. So you can speak up, have your say on transit here in the city. It's 416-595-1655. Get some Canadian content happening here in this station, not just commercial commercial radio with no talk. This is spoken word. This is for you. This is for the community. This is for Toronto. 416-595-1655. This is your forum.
Or you could go to the forum, of course, in person, I guess, if you want to get your word out to the workers that they have there. You know, that's what I noticed on the panel, was John Tory is the moderator, but then they have the panel as workers. They had a bus driver. They had Bob Kinnear was there. He opened it. He had the opening speech. And I guess he was on stage for it. But yeah, I guess that's why they're having these forums, I guess, because of this. You know, they had the this media attack on TTC workers, starting with the sleeping worker, taken at like some really early in the morning. Somebody took the picture, they put it on the front of the Toronto Sun, and you know, then it hit all the papers. And then there was another situation. Oh yeah, cell phone video. Somebody had a cell phone video of a driver taking a break in a coffee time.
You know what gets me is when you think about these isolated incidents, right? Mm-hmm. Which captured essentially the media made sure the public paid attention to this. But when you think about our serious problems to transit, why can't that be communicated? If you talk to any person who takes TTC, like we talked to the folks in the beginning of this segment, they all have problems with the service, but they also have problems when it comes to service. Is my bus isn't coming on time, the things break down, I can't get to my next stop, it's unreliable. And that has to do with your infrastructure. Infrastructure has to do with your system. Mm-hmm. And this is what's called a system breakdown. So you can't have this in a major city, but this is what we have in Toronto, because transit is simply a political ball. It looks like it's a political ball that's tossed back to the passenger saying, you pay for it.
Right. You know, when I was working, I remember when I was working nights, having to take the blue night home. This is because my shift would end after the subway closed. So I had to take the blue night bus. And then I remember, you know, there's a few times I had to work on like a Friday night or a Saturday night. And that is not a fun experience when you're sober. I've taken the TTC after, you know, going to a bar or going out for the night. And you don't notice as much, but when you're actually sober on one of those buses and it's packed with people that had just been partying, then it's, you know, it's a whole different experience. I noticed when I was working nights, you know, I noticed that there's the same, I would get on at roughly the same time, and I notice, you know, there's the same people taking it at the same time. I guess other people that work at nights, you know?
That's right.
And there's...
No, there's a lot. There's millions, I think half the population in Toronto taking the TTC every day. Again, transit, TTC doesn't affect only TTC riders, but also affects drivers.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about TTC.
They have the hardest time, when those buses are packed.
Yeah.
And then it always gets packed at the front, around the driver, where people have to pay, you know, and then you look at the back of the bus and it's empty.
And the system also affects people in their cars, because we're talking about TTC lines. And, you know, it affects traffic. Traffic is also part of transit. And the more you can get people into the TTC, the less traffic you'll have. So it's huge for Toronto. Transit is one of the most important issues for people in the city today. It's one enormous municipal issue. And I know that it's been marginalized. Mm-hmm. It's been, I don't know how it could be. In any country in the world, in Europe, and around the world, transportation is a cause for all kinds of protests. All kinds. If you go to Europe, transit is cause for huge protests and problems, right? Because people protest in order to improve things. But here in Toronto,
yeah,
it's up to, how much is it now, $3?
Yeah, single fare, $3. That's why you got to buy the 5 or 10, get a $2.50 it comes to. Yeah.
All right.
It's going up.
It's going up, and hopefully, you know, if you have some views, you can go to the meeting. And that meeting, again, is at Stephen Leacock Collegiate Institute. That's 2450 Birchmount Road, north of Shepherd Avenue East. Or if you want to wait till it comes downtown, it's on May 2nd right here at Ryerson University. And that's the TTC Riders and Workers Let's Talk Public Town Hall Meetings with Toronto Transit Workers.
Nice. And I think this would be a good time to throw it to a music track. And we'll get, when we come back here, we'll play. We got an interview here. It just came out on Prison Radio a few days ago with Mumia Abu-Jamal. But this track here is a KRS-One track, Free Mumia.
Knowledge.
Word up.
Free Mumia.
Channel Live. KRS-One coming to represent.
Wisdom. Free Mumia. Everywhere I look, there's another house Negro. Talking about their people and how they should be equal. They're talking, but the conversation ain't going nowhere. You can't diss hip-hop, so don't you even go there. See Dolores Tucker, you want to quote the scripture? Every time you hear nigga, well, listen up, sister.
I met up with this girl named Dolores, a prankster. I said, I MC, she said, you're a gangster. But she was more the, she hit the floor like a break dance. Wrapped her up like the arms in the B-boy stance. Recognize, moms, I'm one of your sons. I'm hip-hop in the form of Channel 9 KRS-One. Representing MCs across America. She said, you're the one who be causing all that mass hysteria.
Wisdom shall come out of the mouths of babes and suckling, but you're blinded by cultural ignorance and steady judging. But judge not, least he may be judged. For the judge me, he judge. Ye shall surely be judged who gets no love.
She said, I like it, that's why I jock it. Then I said, you only on my back because I fill brothers' pockets. Got them driving Benzes, Jeeps, and Rolls Royces. Attacking me will leave you with no voices. The choice is yours, not mine. Hang with me. I have you freestyle and bombing graffiti. We can cut it up like wax. Claiming I caused violence, but America was violent before rap. Facts.
Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals Rhea. Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free Mumia? Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals Rhea. Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free Mumia?
On recital, I kicks the vital like the final goal as I watch Babylon fall. I had to rush Limbaugh, hit that pig with an axe. Stuffy dips through the side, fucking cannon at bat. Because he censored the uses of the metaphor. You can get the from my. Because it's you that brings up real horrorcore. Expenditures be getting cut from the floor.
Why, sure. Back before we were born, they sold us out. Yeah, Jay Jackson, we know what you about. He's a slave mason, not a Freemason. Before long, the goddess Tiamat through hip-hop will be racing. Don't stop me, because I'll be the lyricist. At the 1999 Millennium Party held at Giza, saying he's a fraud. Oh my God, it's never in your life you should disrespect an artist. Instead, focus your attention on astronomy and the up-and-coming, shifting the economy. If you can't do that, then heed the final call to free Mumia. Jamal.
Ain't the beast so rough, it could be the white owls. House niggas are full of crap like my Colin Powell. Kicking vowels is how we relieve the tension. But should we start to bounce white people like suspension? You ain't the bitch, just a black man on the corner. But tell me, who blew up Oklahoma? The city, ain't no pity. Call the beast, that's Hakeem, that voice from the east.
Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals Rhea. Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free for Rhea?
Brother, my dear brother, how you doing there, man?
I'm so pleased to hear your distinctive Oakland introduction.
No, brother, we love you, we respect you, we want you to be free. So many of us, I won't speak on behalf of so many of us, believe you didn't do it. Your voice is so very important. We know you believe in justice for everybody, from president to policeman, but we believe you are innocent, and we thank God that your voice is still alive and you're sounding so rich and deep, my brother.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. I want to move, and I love all of you, and thank you for coming. I know it's a cold, somewhat snowy night. At least it is in Greene County, Pennsylvania. I thank you all for coming. Welcome. This is from the preface of Jailhouse Lawyers. I mean, come on. Seriously. What in the hell is a jailhouse lawyer? Depending on your station in life, the term is apt to evoke a variety of responses. Disbelief, laughter for some, perhaps confusion. jailhouse lawyer? The term implies a dissonance, a kind of contradiction in terms. Yet, even if some shun the title, there are tens of thousands of men and women who actually are such a thing. And like most people, they're heir to all the winds of whim, good and bad, competent and incompetent, large-hearted and petty. Years ago, before I entered the House of Death, I interviewed a man in Philadelphia's Holmesburg prison who was quite opinionated on the subject. His name was Delbert Africa, a well-known member of the Revolutionary Move organization, who soon would face a de facto life sentence in Pennsylvania's dungeons for being among nine people who had the temerity to survive a deadly police assault on their home and headquarters on August 8, 1978. Delbert Africa was an eloquent interviewee who spoke with a distinctive country accent, his conversation peppered with passion, reason, and commitment. He spoke disparagingly of jailhouse lawyers, and when I asked him why he felt this way, he responded, "Them dudes get in there, read all them law books, and before you know it, they be crazy as hell." "What do you mean, crazy?" I asked. "Well, they may not be crazy when they get here, but after a while, after a few months of reading it, they go down to City Hall, and when they see that them folks down there in City Hall, in the system, don't really go by that so-called law, well, it plumb drives them crazy." "Yeah, man, but why drive them dudes crazy?" "Because they can't believe that the system don't follow their own laws." "But why?" I continued. "It drives their ass crazy because they can't handle the fact that the system just make and break laws as it see fit. How many treaties they done signed with the Indians? Ain't a one of them they done kept. Some of them broke before the ink was dry on them old treaties. Them the same folks who run this system today. If they couldn't keep a treaty with Indians when they first got here, what make you think they're going to keep their so-called law today, especially when it comes to me and you, man? Bruh, I get that. I understand that. But what's up with that crazy jailhouse lawyers? I don't get that. They go crazy because, Moo, they really believe in the system. And this system always betrays those that believe in it. That's what drives them out their minds, man. They can't handle that. It literally drives them out their minds. I see them around here, walking around here days, crazy as a bedbug. It took me a while, but I got him. When he told me those words, I was a free man, as free as a black man can be in America. And working as a reporter and producer for a Philadelphia public radio station, when Delbert Africa broke it down for me, I had no idea that years later, his words would take on such significance. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yeah, my dear brother, that's powerful, don't man.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Green and is subject to monitoring and recording.
You still there, my brother?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. I tell you, though, brother, it's not just the powerful and poignant words, but it's also the style and the form, though, man. I hear a little Curtis Mayfield in your voice, you know what I mean? That rich, rich tradition that flows through you. And that connects to each and every one of us who are concerned about justice from below, which holds across the board, but begins with poor folk catching hell in the language of Malcolm X, though, man. I salute your witness, because the thing is, if you are a free black man on death row.
Don't tell nobody.
We want you free on the outside, but you see, there's different kind of freedoms, you know what I mean? Because believe me, we got a whole lot of folk out here who are still in prison in
That's
their
right.
minds and hearts
That's
and souls.
Right. That's absolutely true.
Very much
I'm reminded
so.
Of Harriet Tubman when she was commended for freeing those hundreds of black folks there.
Yes.
She could have freed a whole lot more if they knew they were slaves.
That's exactly right. And she had to, she was only 4 feet and about 7 inches, and she had some 6'5 folk who got scared, and she had to put the gun and say, "Mama gonna shoot you dead if you make some noise." Because you're gonna reveal all the rest of us involved. But that's the tradition out of which we come, my brother.
That is exactly
And it's got roots that's rooted in struggles against white supremacist slavery, which is a form of American terrorism. But those R-O-U-T-E-S routes that take us to every corner of the globe, that's why you represent a struggle for black freedom that's concerned about the freedom of everybody, but it looks at the world from
this
below.
From the Police Correctional Institution at Green.
Well, brother, I certainly try because, you know, even though we all come from, you know, different environments and different backgrounds, this
yes.
is one world.
That's
this
right.
is one world.
That's right. And
you know,
one
we
human family.
The same air.
That's what
yes.
Absolutely, yes. though, brother.
You know, we drink the same water, you know. I mean, it used to be they have segregated water fountains, but they ain't got that no more.
that's right.
I would just say this, if I may. Just yesterday, I spoke with a brother who was a anti-death penalty activist, but a global one. And that is, he meets with people from around the world and goes to conferences with people from around the world. And he told me something that was really quite remarkable that I had never heard of or read of. He was at a conference in California, and a scholar from Turkey was there. And the guy was telling me, now, you know, when we hear Turkey, we think of course, remember the infamous movie Midnight Express. It showed a very repressive and brutal system in a prison system in Turkey. Well, the scholar explains to him that when a Turkish politician runs for office, what he promises to get elected is forgiveness and leniency and justice and fairness for people arrested and charged with offenses. And when he said that, kind of my mouth dropped. I said, damn, it's like that in Turkey? He said, yeah. When I thought about it, it made a lot of sense, only because we know that Turkey is a non-Arab but a Muslim country. Many Muslim countries really do follow bits of the Quran where there are provisions in the Quran for forgiveness for all kinds of, you know, offenses against communities and people. The only question, of course, in such an instance is, will the family forgive? If the family forgives, then the state, you know, offers forgiveness as well. But to just imagine a politician running like that, mm-hmm. it kind of blew my mind, because you can't think of something similar in the American context.
Wow,
I mean,
that's
it's the
true.
Exact polar opposite in the United States.
That's
but it also shows us that what we think we know about another country is based on sometimes false projections over our media. You know, mm-hmm. we would never have thought of Turkey as that kind of country, but of course it is.
Very real. Brother, I want to thank you first for your wonderful piece on science fiction on Octavia Butler and Du Bois's short story and Left Turn, you know that wonderful piece?
Oh, I remember what you're talking about. I'm amazed that you read it.
oh, Lord, no, I try to keep track of you now, my brother. Oh, indeed, indeed. And I know you wanted us to read Neil Ferguson's piece on Complexity and Collapse in Foreign Affairs, talking about empires that are in deep decline, culture in decay, greed running amok, poor people, working people, oftentimes feeling so impotent, powerless, hopeless, helpless, so that they don't organize and don't mobilize. Did you want to give us your characterization of where we are right now in light of Ferguson's talk about empire?
I read that 2 days ago.
Yeah, so it's on your mind, right? It was on mine, too.
I was blown away by it because, yeah. I mean, of course, this is a scholar who can be deemed conservative. I mean, coming from Oxford and whatnot and, you know, of course, British.
Yes.
But when he looked at empires around the world, he found something very similar, a kind of a rise, a coasting, and then a decline.
That's right.
And, of course, there are different reasons and different eras. And I think, you know, most people understood that the empire was in decline, especially during the last administration, where things were so raw and so crude, shall we say. We don't torture. You know, that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, in the former administration, we had Abu Ghraib and we had Guantanamo and those kinds of things. The truth of the matter is we still have those kinds of things. We have Abu Ghraibs in every state in the United States. We have Guantanamos in every state in the United States and in the federal system. And it's just that, you know, we talk about it in terms of an administration. We don't talk about it in terms of a system. And until we begin looking at the empire as being
60 seconds remaining.
A bipartisan reality that affects people no matter who's at the top, they will never be able to change this reality that we're living in, the fact that we're all in a kind of prison.
Mm. Oh,
And of course, we're in a prison in space and time. And the question is, what kind of person we're going to be? And my brother, it's just amazing to me in terms of the quality of your spirit. Your voice is just so, it's humble, it's human, it's still firm, it's still fortified. It's just incredible.
30 seconds remaining.
Well, brother, I am, even despite this condition in this place, I feel surrounded by love, by people like you and many other people, by Joanna and Mark and all our other friends. Thank you all. I love you all. And love is the most powerful force in the universe.
Yes, it is, my brother. Oh, yes. We love you. We love you, my brother. Love you, brother. We love you, brother.
I love you, too.
Love you, brother.
Thank
you
all.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're just wrapping up here. That was interview there with Mumi Abu-Jamal and Dr. Cornel West, who's a university professor, and he's a political commentator and a scholar. And there is also word that people are would like President Obama to nominate Dr. Cornel West as the next Supreme Court judge, because there is a vacancy coming up that Obama says he's going to try to fill as soon as possible. That would be a big thing for, I guess, all the political prisoners if somebody like a Cornel West was selected as a Supreme Court justice. You know, those are some of the words coming out. You know, also the words out of Washington, the major nuclear summit just took place. President Obama, you know, has always said that was his one of his main issues. 47 world leaders were there, and they've made some decisions on the nuclear situation. You know, so there is things going on. And another headline today? The Canadian loonie surpasses parity with the U.S. dollar. I think it closed a fraction of a cent above a dollar U.S. So things are changing, you know, in the economies worldwide. And here on CKLN, Word of Mouth Wednesday, just wrapping up for today. Just wanted to mention a few events, though. We got this Thursday, April 15th, tomorrow, there's going to be a noon rally against Premier McGuinty's cuts to the social assistance and Ontario Ministry of Health's plan to eliminate the special diet program. The location of that is going to be noon tomorrow at the Allen Gardens at Sherbourne and Girard Street, downtown Toronto. Check rabble.ca for more information on that one. Also, Saturday afternoon, Toronto True Seekers Street Action back at Yonge and Dundas Square. TorontoTrueSeekers.com for more info on Toronto True Seekers. Next Tuesday, 6 p.m., April the 20th, Tuesday, there's a public forum by Dr. Aisha Siddiqui on the question of, is the post-Musharraf military role different towards the Pakistani state and the U.S. on the war on terror? And that's taking place next Tuesday, 6 p.m. at Ryerson University, Eric Palin Hall, 87 Girard Street in Toronto. That'll be something going on right near campus on Pakistan there. But I just want to thank Robin Yeto and his guest on the show earlier today. Diego Mendez, yes, from the Justice for Genders campaign. And also like to thank all the good TTC workers and riders for riding the rocket. Also, just want to end off the show this week, Word of Mouth Wednesday, with a quick clip of President Obama's speech at the nuclear summit. And stay tuned for our next show, which is going to be the
major
Blue Remedy.
Welcome development. Russia announced that it will close its last weapons-grade plutonium production reactor. After many years of effort, I'm pleased that the United States and Russia agreed today to eliminate 68 tons of plutonium for our weapons programs, plutonium that would have been enough for about 17,000 nuclear weapons. Instead, we will use this material to help generate electricity for our people. These are exactly the kinds of commitments called for in the work plan that we adopted today. So we've made real progress in building a safer world. I would also note that the United States has made its own commitments. We are strengthening security at our own nuclear facilities and will invite the IAEA to review the security at our Neutron Research Center. This reflects our commitment to sharing the best practices that are needed in our global efforts. We're seeking significant funding increases for programs to prevent nuclear proliferation and trafficking. And today, the United States is joining with our Canadian partners in calling on nations to commit $10 billion to extending our highly successful global partnership to strengthen nuclear security around the world.